Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up to Purpose with your host, John Stanko. This program will help you find your purpose and, more importantly, how to make your purpose work for you. And now, here's John Stanko.
Hello out there in Internet land. John Stanko, your host. And when we are broadcasting and recording this, it is a Monday. It happens to be the Monday after the Easter weekend. And I am sitting at my office desk looking out my four back windows, looking at beautiful sunshine. And the temperatures are up there. And so spring has sprung. That doesn't mean we can't have some more cold weather, but I was feeling so spring-like that I have renewed my partial season tickets for the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball, although I'm as mad at them as I could be, but I have been a fan for forever, and a partial game package is just a great way for me to get out. Have it on the calendar. I have to get out. I have to step away from my desk. Gives me a wonderful chance to connect with people. I have signed books at games. I have mentored people and coached people at games in the past. And so it's a great way to do that and gives us an extended period of time with whoever I go with. So anyway, right before I came on, I say I have renewed them, but they called me for payments. So I haven't quite paid for them yet, but they know I'm good for it because I have I guess I have been a season ticket holder now since 2012. And before that, when the stadium here first opened, I was for 2 or 3 years. So I have some seniority. And but, you know, my immigrant grandfather, who couldn't read or write English, adopted baseball as his connection with America. And I later have since discovered that a lot of immigrants did this. And so when we went to visit him, he had a radio, and he would listen to every game, all game, I mean, the whole game, every game, first 154 games a year, then 162 games a year. And when we went there, we could not talk if a game was on until there was a commercial break. And then my two uncles, who were his sons, who were career men in the Army, when they came home from the Army, went into that my grandfather's home after he died. They got cable TV and they bought the package where they could watch the Pirates. And now I have season tickets to go see the Pirates, and I figure if this progression continues, my grandson is going to own the Pirates. That's the only, or the stadium, or a private box or something, because that's the only place left for us to go. I'm holding in my hand a book written by today's guest, Thinking Your Way to Wealth, a Guide to Financial Independence by Orlando Houston. We'll be bringing Orlando on in a moment to talk about the book, to talk about what it was like to write the book, the reasons he decided to write the book. And it is chock full of information that I was going to say I endorse. He doesn't really need my endorsement. These are time-tested principles that Orlando presents in his own unique way. And I think the book has done very well since it was released a couple weeks ago, and we hope it does even better. So in a moment, we are going to bring him on and talk to him about that. In my own world, beyond renewing my season tickets for baseball, I feel like my travel is upon me once again. And this weekend, next weekend, following weekend, four weekends in a row now in coming up, I will have activities that I used to do on a regular basis but stopped doing during COVID. Now, you know, I'm telling everyone I'm cautiously optimistic. I know this when you're talking a worldwide pandemic, and you're talking even 300 plus million people in the United States with 300 million opinions about what needs to happen and the vaccine and everything else. I don't think, you know, I think we're going to see repercussions of all this for a long time to come. But I do see some signs of people being, you know, able and restrictions being loosened. And so I'm looking forward to it, which means it's going to change my schedule. For the last 13 months, I have been home. I have been here. I've had freedom over my schedule. I could do these blog radios. I could do 3 times a week Facebook Live. But I think that's about to change. And I am a big proponent, if you have followed me, of always putting our activities under the spotlight to see, is it time to stop them? Is it time to move on? I don't like to stop things when they're on the way down. I like to stop them at their peak, and which gives me time then to move on to other things, like writing or collaborating or editing interesting books, which I certainly have in my hand. And so now let's go ahead and bring on the author. Orlando, welcome to Wake Up to Purpose.
Thank you. Thank you, John, for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it is wonderful to have you. And before we went on, we were talking about the NCAA basketball finals tonight. So that should be a good game. And even sports world. I watched baseball last night from the West Coast, and I think they had 12,000 people in the Angel Stadium for a baseball game. So we do see things loosening up after the pandemic. What impact or effect did the pandemic have on you and your business, if any?
Yeah, good question. Thanks. So, you know, like everybody, the COVID pandemic definitely had an impact on me. I've been working a lot from my home office. I've been in the office here and there, but more so hybrid. You know, I've noticed that some people are starting to get back, you know, in the swing of meeting in person, which is completely fine. But I, you know, personally think that we're going to be in a hybrid world for the foreseeable future.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, tell our listeners a little bit about your business, what it is that you do and who you do it with, and share a little bit about your career.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah, so I'm a financial consultant for a major firm in Pittsburgh. I work a lot with individuals in the different phases of planning for their financial future, whether it be short-term, intermediate, or long-term. Some people, you know, they want to plan for, you know, their kids' college. They may want to plan to get a car, buy a home, or have some type of emergency savings. Some people want to plan for the long run. They want to look at the big picture. You know, they want to look at where they are today and where they're going to be tomorrow, and my job is to help them build a roadmap to get to where they are, you know, because as you know, you can drive from here to California or here to Florida or anywhere, and depending on the map you have, if you have one, will determine how quick or how safe you get there. So that's what I help my clients with.
Yeah. When in reading your book, it's fascinating. And this show is Wake Up to Purpose, you know, talking to people about finding their life purpose. Talk to our listeners a little bit about how you stumbled on or how you journeyed into your career as a financial consultant.
Yeah, so when I was in high school, it's actually when it started, we had to do what we called a senior project. And that senior project consisted of some topic that or career that we wanted to do whenever we graduated from high school or graduated from college. So I was always interested in finances, but hadn't really delved into the stock market. One day I was actually watching TV of a news station and noticed that they were talking about different companies and some of the companies that I knew of, and seen a bunch of, you know, different numbers on the screen and red and green going up and down is really kind of, you know, captivating. And, you know, from that point, you know, kind of like piqued my interest. But when I had to do my senior project, actually did a senior project on the stock market, becoming a stockbroker. So I interviewed a stockbroker in Pittsburgh, picked his brain for, you know, what he thought, you know, was the best way to go about that career. And I eventually did the Singer Project on being a stockbroker, got a really good grade on it. So that was good. That was also like a boost of confidence, you know, for myself to get a good grade on something that I hadn't, you know, done before. And from then I went to University of Pittsburgh and started a major in economics. And while I was studying economics, I noticed that, you know, there was more to, I guess, money, finance, especially helping people, than just individual stocks. So it was more comprehensive. So from there, kind of spawned that interest of being, I guess, more like a holistic type of planner helping people. And that's where, you know, it kind of trickled down to, you know, becoming a financial consultant. So that's where I got, you know, my interest in this career, and it's been going very well, you know, since, and I'm glad that I made that decision.
So you just randomly picked somebody to call to talk about the stock market?
Yeah. So ironically, you know, back then, I was actually going through the phone book, and I was nervous. I mean, coming, you know, being a kid from the inner city in Pittsburgh, I didn't know any stockbrokers. I didn't know any financial consultants. So, you know, for me it was, okay, I have this in your project. How am I going to find somebody in Pittsburgh? You know, it's not New York. You know, what you typically see on TV, it's not Chicago. You know, these stockbrokers aren't just around, you know. So it's not easy to find. So anyway, flipping through the phone book and actually, you know, found a stockbroker that was local in downtown Pittsburgh, and called him. I was kind of hesitant at first because I'm thinking, you know, he doesn't have time to talk to me. You know, he's a stockbroker. But anyway, he took the time to talk to me, and it, you know, really worked out. And like I said, it was a really good decision. But yeah, it was kind of weird, you know, that I just put through the phone book and kind of landed on a person to call.
Yeah, very an invisible hand, very, very serendipity. But, you know, that's only, I think, one track of your story, because you were working at an early age. I mean, you were, it seems, very motivated to, like you said, money, you know, and finance seemed to be of interest. But that wasn't your first entree when you called him into the world of work, was it?
No, it definitely wasn't. So I had the first investment, right, first experience with investing, or I guess a lack thereof, at least what I thought was an investment. So I had went out and purchased shoes. I used to like shoes a lot when I was younger. And I purchased a pair of shoes, and over, I want to say, maybe a month or two, the shoes ended up tearing. Something happened to them, so I had to take them back to the store. So I took them back to the store, and I thought that because I only had it for a short period of time, I would be able to sell those shoes back for the same price that I bought them for. And lo and behold, the merchant told me that I couldn't do it because I had already wore the shoes. But that seemed kind of, you know, kind of odd to me, because I literally didn't have them for that long. And that's when that, I guess, proverbial light bulb went off in my head, you know, that, you know, if I went out and paid $100 for, you know, these pair of shoes, and I couldn't even sell them back for what I bought them for not too long before that, you know, something was wrong with that picture. And, you know, from there, again, tying the stock market, and I actually purchased stock in that company, and the stock started to earn. Of course, over time, you know, it takes time. You have to be patient, but it did earn, and that $100 eventually grew, and then I was able to take that money out, you know, and I could purchase another pair of shoes if I wanted to with the gains from that. So that was definitely an eye-opening moment for me that also piqued my interest in being a stockbroker, you know, world of finance and whatnot. So that was, I'm actually glad that that did happen, because, you know, had I not, I would have still had that same mindset of just, you know, purchasing those pair of shoes and not being able to get the same amount of money that I paid for them.
But you mean, where were you getting the money for your shoes?
Well, I worked. Yeah, I worked for a hospital. Yeah, I worked for a hospital in Pittsburgh, major hospital, for a number of years. You know, and working, you know, tirelessly, you know, day in, day out, kind of punching the clock. you know, for me was normal. And I actually had, before I even had thought about going to school, one of the nurses at the hospital I worked with told me about a program at University of Pittsburgh, and I ended up going to Pitt. But, you know, to answer your question, yeah, I worked for a hospital for at least 10 years, and I guess put my time in.
Yeah. Now, you were working through high school and into college, right?
Yeah. I worked in high school. Yeah, you know, early on, I noticed that there wasn't anything in life that was going to come to me free. You know, I had to work for everything that I wanted. Of course, I wanted to play sports, just like any kid would want to play. No, I would say most kids, for that matter, want to, you know, want to play sports and have other things that they can do. But, you know, had my mom, single mom, you know, raising me. I didn't have the luxury of being able to, you know, work and play sports. You know, it was either one or the other. So, you know, for me, working through high school, you know, after school, going to work, and then going, you know, to college and still continuing to work and just knowing, like I said before, that, you know, nothing in life is free, right? So you just have to make sure that you work hard, and your hard work's usually rewarded.
Yeah. Now, that's your first chapter in your book, Ain't No Free Lunch. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Yeah.
So ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, expound on that a little bit.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, like I was saying earlier, that everything in life you have to work for, right, and nothing's free. So early on, you know, I noticed that, you know, if you want something in life, you have to go for it. You have to work hard. And just because your situation, you know, would dictate, that could be your environment, that you may not, you know, achieve certain things in life, doesn't mean that you have to, you know, stop there. And when I was growing up, you know, usually, you know, I see people like myself playing basketball or football, you know, to earn a lot of money to create wealth. But for me, that wasn't an option. So, you know, ain't no such thing as a free lunch. As funny as it sounds, I'm sure, you know, some of you have heard that term. It's basically just, you know, kind of going over the idea that anything that you want in life, you're going to have to work for, and don't let your current situation determine your future. And everything that you want to get out of life is definitely within your reach as long as you set your goals and as long as you're willing to work hard for it.
Yeah. Now, but at the same time, you were at the hospital, and you, if I remember correctly in the book, you were looking at your higher education options, and you got quite a surprise from a benefit that your hospital had. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So the hospital that I was working for also had a partnership with a university that I went to. And as a part of the program, if you worked part-time or if you worked full-time, they would pay for a portion or all of your college tuition. So for me, you know, I kind of fell into it, and I was actually really good because when I graduated, I didn't have as much debt as I would have had if I didn't do it. And, you know, I'm very thankful that that opportunity was there. But again, you know, working full time, going to school full time, it's not easy. But the opportunity presented itself, you know, for me to take advantage of that program, you know, I took the, I guess, bull by the horns and, you know, did what I had to do.
Yeah, and why choose economics? I mean, it would seem they're related, but with what you're doing, but was that a conscious decision to focus on that major?
Yeah, that was a conscious decision. You know, I thought about finance because, you know, that's more of, I guess, like a direct correlation into what I had learned about, you know, being a stockbroker in finance. But economics interested me because, you know, that, you know, talks about everything, you know, people, the interaction, people with each other, money as a whole. So I wanted to make sure that I didn't kind of single myself to, you know, just one way of looking, you know, at life, you know, at the world, but also, you know, look at it from a different lens, which economics provided that lens that I needed to or needed to look through.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's jump ahead. So, we're going to go back and talk about a lot of concepts in the book. But why write a book? What were you hoping to accomplish? Why was the time right now to do it? What was your thinking in producing this very, what I consider a very effective book?
Yeah. So last year, as we talked about, we got hit with a pandemic. We hadn't, encountered anything like it in the past 100 years. And, I've always known that people didn't do a really good job of managing their money, budgeting their money, looking towards the future. But when the pandemic hit, I would get a lot of calls from people really concerned about their retirement plans and needed to take money out. And then, of course, you see on TV, the unemployment rate was skyrocketing. And people were disproportionately affected. And, for me, coming from the inner city, poverty, I know all too well, how that can, something like this that happened can really affect you. So that was kind of the, driving force, like the catalyst behind me writing this book in the time frame that I did, and really to serve as a guide. I think that the people that were affected for the most part didn't really, or maybe still don't, have something to refer to. They, as far as a guide, they don't have anybody to talk to. They, feel as if that, it's to talk about finance is something that they kind of shy away from because they don't know the first thing about where to start. So I wanted to write a book that was easy to read, didn't have a lot of that financial jargon in it that people are intimidated by or intimidated from to help them out. So that was really the driving force to write my book.
Yeah. Before we get more specific even into the book, what was the process like for somebody listening to say, wow, you wrote a book and, I've thought about writing a book or I don't think I could write a book. What was the process? Was it easier than you thought, more difficult, more demanding? Just talk to us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, good question. So, for me, writing this book was not difficult. One, I have experience. I've been a financial consultant for going on 10 years. It is a commitment. It is a commitment, and I'm not going to, act like it's not because you do have to take time to, focus your thoughts. But one thing that worked for me was not so much, thinking about, okay, am I writing this the right way? Is it flowing? Just getting my thoughts to paper. I think for a lot of people, that's the challenge. They want to make sure it's right the first time. But if you just let it flow, and if you truly believe in what you're writing, what you're talking about, and you know what you're talking about, it flows. It flows.
Yep.
So, it was definitely a good, fun experience, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
All right. That's what we like to hear. Now, you mentioned earlier, poverty, and but you make the very emphatic point in the book that poverty is not dependent on your zip code, where you live. Talk to us about what you mean by that.
Yeah, so poverty is typically thought of as being in, maybe subsidized housing or, some other situation where it's not, not likable. But actually, I look at poverty as not based on your zip code, but based on your mindset, based on, and for the purpose of this book, based on how you manage your money. I've worked with people that have had, a lot of money, have a lot of money, and, they're in debt up to their eyeballs, and they're looking for, ways to kind of get out. And then I work with people that don't make as much money, but they have, more of a hold on their, finances. They live within their means. And it's not a straight line. Of course, everybody's different, but, poverty is actually a mindset. And, you know, if you're not financially healthy, then how could you be physically healthy, you know, as well? Mm-hmm. So I like to look at, you know, poverty as a state of mind and not always based on your zip code, your geographic location.
Yeah, we published another book for a financial consultant, and he talked about in the early days when he was with the bank, they had to go repossess a dentist chair. You know, again, you would think, oh, a dentist, they got, you know, they make lots of money, and doctors, but he was such a poor manager that they had to go take the very thing that his patients sat in to make money because so, and that's really, I guess, an example of what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. It doesn't matter who you are, dentist, doctor, lawyer, you know, janitorial, you know, person.
Yeah.
We are not, you know, nobody's above. Yeah, so definitely, I mean, that's a sad situation, right, to take the dentist chair, the thing you use to, you know, one of the instruments you use to make your money, you know, they're having to take it. But unfortunately, that's what happens far too often.
Yeah. And one of the chapters closely, you know, on the heels of your concept of poverty is a consumer mindset. Talk to us about that and how that impacts our ability to gain wealth and financial independence.
Yeah, so the consumer mindset chapter, you know, talks about the, I guess, way that most people think about or their relationship with their money. So a lot of times we're buy first, save or invest second. And we find ourselves pinching pennies or robbing Peter to pay Paul, right, to get by because, you know, we're just consuming, you know, a lot of products. So we're constantly bombarded with ads on TV or social media or on the radio. And, you know, we're, you know, of course, intrigued by these things and we want them. So we have a lot of products that really don't mean too much of anything after we buy them. And we're not saving enough of our money. So I'm a firm believer that you should at least save close to 20% of what you're making. Because at the end of the day, you know, when life happens, you're going to need to have something to fall back on. And you should structure, if you're saving 20%, and of course, I know that's easier said than done, you know, start somewhere and work your way up. But that means you should structure your life, your finances, your bills on 80% of your income. And then that way, you know that you're going to be able to save that 20%. So you should always keep a portion of what you earn before anybody else gets it, because of course, we always know that as soon as we get paid, right, or even before we get paid, you know, we're seeing things that are, you know, making us want to go out and spend our money. And other people are getting rich, right, off of, you know, our liquid money, you know, so to speak, because we're just basically giving it away. So, yeah, definitely don't buy first. You want to save first, invest first. Save and invest, and then buy. And don't always look for that instant gratification.
Yeah, some people call paying yourself first, you know, before you start to pay everybody else. Now I'm going to put you on the spot. We were talking about the NCAA game tonight. You said you haven't watched much basketball, and there was a specific reason why. I'm curious as to, was that a part of what you're talking about? Did you evaluate your watching options for entertainment and make a financial decision that was you felt in the best interest of your family and your financial picture?
Yes. Actually, I did. So my cable bill, my wife and I had talked about cable for, you know, the cost we were paying for, I don't know how long. And the bill's like 260-something bucks.
Yep.
Now, you know, I work a lot. You know, my kids, they go to school. My wife, you know, she's busy as well. And we don't watch that many channels on TV. So, you know, was the 260-some-odd dollars plus occasional movie purchases, you know, warranted, you know, for what we were getting out of it. And then we made the conscious decision to switch to another, you know, style of TV, you know, to watch. So with that, it definitely saved us a lot of money. My bill now is about $20 a month, from $260 to $20. And I haven't really missed too much of anything. And I haven't watched, I haven't had a chance to watch or even thought about, I guess, for that matter, watching the NCAA, because, you know, I don't have cable. But it was a conscious decision that we made. And, you know, we're saving $240 a month. That is going towards something else now that is more meaningful. So I would definitely recommend, you know, not tell everybody to get rid of your cable, but if you got to cut the cord, sometimes you got to cut the cord.
But it wasn't just a random decision, because I think some people may be listening and think, oh, we couldn't do that. We couldn't live without it. And maybe they can't. But I would guess that your decision was tied to a longer-term strategy, that you saw something you want in the future or something else you even want now, and you that made that decision a little bit easier. Would that be accurate?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that would definitely be accurate. So by saving, you know, that $240 per month, is going to allow me to pay down debt that I want to pay down, or, you know, also to invest more of that money. So, you know, I've taken that $240. I didn't go out and just spend it. You know, I'm not living my life based on another $240, but now repositioning that $240 and putting that away into other investments as well to earn more money off of that, because by, you know, saving that money, now the future looks a little potentially brighter, and I'm able to just be, I guess, more, get a better return on the money that I was spending. So, it definitely was a conscious decision, more, I guess, because, you know, I'm a financial consultant, and I think about these things all the time. I'm always trying to make sure that I put myself in the best position. But, yeah, it's definitely a conscious decision to, and it's definitely going to help out in the long run.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned, you know, I mean, cable, gym memberships, you know, you didn't mention it specifically, but nails, tattoos, you know, pedicures, all these things we have in some ways talked ourselves into the thinking we can't live without them. But I think you are presenting the fact that, yes, we can, but there has to be a plan in place. It's not just, you know, you close the blinds and don't go out. You have to live. But why are you living? What are your long-term goals? And what can you do today to contribute towards those long-term goals? Now, you mentioned the D word, and just a minute or two ago, debt. And your one chapter is debt, easy to get in but hard to get out. Talk to us about that concept and what you see in as a financial consultant where debt is concerned.
Yeah, so debt is, I like to say debt's a thief, right? Because one, we're tricked into, well, you can feel like you're tricked, right, into giving your money away. And because we may not have the money at the time to pay for, because we didn't properly plan, we're forced to take on debt. The interest that you pay on that debt, I consider a penalty, because they're charging you to spend your own money. So, yeah, when I was in college, I had got an offer for a credit card. And, you know, as a young kid, I'm thinking, oh, great, you know, I'll get a credit card. What's the worst that can happen? Of course, I spent, you know, that amount of money. I used up that amount of debt or loan that I had pretty quickly. And I didn't realize that the interest rate on that loan was or that debt was pretty high. So, you know, with a, you know, say 20% interest rate, I'm having to pay back an additional 20% for every dollar, you know, that I spend. So when you think about that, how long does it take you to actually pay that back? So you borrowed $1,000, but you have to pay another 20% on that. So that is going to, you know, continue to be a problem for you. So you know, getting into debt is easy because the companies will continue to give you credit cards, and if they don't care, they're going to say, all right, great. You know, you make this mm-hmm. amount of income. Here's the credit card. And mm-hmm. what you think is that, you know, you're just going to be able to pay this off pretty quick, and you kind of kick that can down the road. But then now mm-hmm. you accumulate that debt, and maybe life happens, right, because you haven't saved. So you can't pay that debt off, and you have something else you need to do. Now you take on another credit card or another loan, and you have to, you know, maybe like rob Peter to pay Paul. You're taking one loan to pay off another loan, but you're still in debt. And you're digging that hole, and you're digging that hole, and you're digging that hole, and then it's harder mm-hmm. to get out of that hole. So, you know, I'm definitely an advocate for a little amount of debt if you can help it. And if you are in debt, you know, I do offer some strategies on how mm-hmm. to get out of debt, one being the snowball effect. So if you have, you know, say four credit cards that you're paying on, and maybe you're paying extra on each of those cards, because you feel as if I pay extra each of these cards, I'll pay this debt down quicker. So I offer the advice of mm-hmm. the guidance of taking, you know, that extra money that you're putting on those credit cards and putting all of that on the smallest card that you have, and then paying that one off, and then taking that amount that you were putting on that smallest credit card and start putting onto the other ones. Now, I'm not saying do not pay the minimum balance on the right. other cards that you have, mm-hmm. but, you know, take the majority of the money, and then it turns to a snowball. So now your smallest one is done. You take that, put on the next one, and then before you know mm-hmm. it, you're done. But you have to be disciplined to make sure that you carry that plan out.
Yeah, yeah. But you're very clear, not some debt. I mean, you made a distinction. I mean, people may need a car for their work or a home, or and mm-hmm. they don't have the money to pay cash for the home. In that instance, there's an asset that's creating some value for them, but even there should be a strategy to not pay any more of the penalty. Our pastor calls it a tax. On, you know, you're being, you know, charged a tax for using somebody else's money. You're just saying have a plan and get it done as quickly as possible. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yep, you got it. Yep, have a plan. Get it done, you know, execute the plan, and just, you know, be done with it and try your best not to get back into that situation. And just kind of going back to what we were talking before of structuring your life off of 80%, mm-hmm. you know, once you have that debt paid off, now you have the ability to structure your life, structure your finances mm-hmm. based on 80% of your income. So that 20% mm-hmm. that you're saving is going to take the place of that credit card that you were going to get mm-hmm. when life happens, because life doesn't work in a straight line.
Yeah, and before you know it, you no matter how young you are, and Lord willing, you're going to get older, and you're going to have to face the realities of decisions you made when you were younger, where your finances were concerned. I know once I took a group to Africa, and I think I put all the tickets, I charged them all. It was about $20,000. I had 18 people going or something. So on the credit card statement, they have to spell out by law now, you know, like if I make the minimum payment, how long would it take me to pay that money off? And I think it was 16 years. and how much would I have paid, you know, the $20,000 I think I'd have paid, and this isn't exact, but it was something like another $30,000 or something on that purchase if I'm just making the minimum payment, which mostly goes towards payment on interest. And so mm-hmm. people don't understand that, and I know that's you're in the business of you're not selling something, you're trying to help people think through the whole reality of finances and the decisions that we make. Now we see these ads on TV, you know, where somebody's calling their financial consultant or they're getting with their financial consultant. Is that an accurate picture? Is that what you do on a regular basis with your clients, with the people you work with?
Yes, it is. Yeah, so I help people plan for, you know, like I said before, kids going to college, you know, plan for short-term liquid savings. I'm helping people with develop plans. So they say, hey, call your financial consultant. That's exactly what I do. You know, that's the service that I offer, you know, to try to help people think a little differently and become disciplined. Often I have to act as that accountability person for the, you know, client that I'm helping because, again, left to your own devices, you're going to revert right back to what you know. So I'm always that, you know, person in your ear saying, hey, you know, let's meet, talk about the plan, you know, that we came up with, because it's not good enough just to make a plan. You have to carry through with it. And then, you know, when I do the analysis for them, I'm able to determine, you know, what they need, what they should do given their goals. And if followed through, then they're rewarded with the goal being achieved.
We'll do it again towards the end, but if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, great. So you can always go to my, website. It's www.thinkingyourwaytowealth.com. You can also send me an email at thinkingyourwaytowealth@gmail.com.
thinkingyourwaytowealth@gmail.com. Or www.thinkingyourwaytowealth.com. So we'll revisit that. Make sure our listeners or anybody who tunes in later from the archives knows how to get in touch with you. And I have put a link on the homepage for this show, the Thinking Your Way to Wealth. It's in pink. I don't know why they do that, but that just means there's a link there, and it'll take the listener to Amazon, where both the paper and the Kindle version of your book, Thinking Your Way to Wealth, A Guide to Financial Independence, can be purchased for a very reasonable price. You spend a lot of time, Orlando, in your book talking about thinking about your family, about the future, about when you may not be here, which sometimes, well, all the time, we most of the time we don't have any control over. What do you have to say to a listener about insurance, about legacy? Just talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I'm a firm believer that, you know, protecting your family should, of course, it's general, but you should think about having insurance, you know, something that protects your family in the event that you're not here. I do believe that life insurance is the foundation to every financial plan. Reason being that if you have a retirement plan at work or you have a side investment, you're putting money into it, you have good intentions to put this money in for 30 years, but what if you pass away in a year? That company that manages that plan isn't going to pay your family the future value of, you know, what that account would have been. They're going to pay your family the present value, which, you know, could be anything depending on fluctuations. But when you have life insurance, that pays out more money than what you actually put in. And that is often immediate. So that is a way to protect your family because at the end of the day, you know, if you, God forbid, you pass away, you want to make sure that your family is taken care of. You know, you want to make sure your burial is taken care of. You want to make sure your debt obligation is taken care of. If you have young kids, you want to make sure that, you know, your kids are taken care of, your spouse is taken care of, your significant other. And you definitely want to make sure, at least in my opinion, that with insurance, if you do have, you know, kids or people that depend on you for a period of time, you want to have at least 10 times your income as a life insurance amount. Now, it's easier said than done. There's different types of insurance out there. There's term insurance, which usually which expires after a certain point in time. Then there's permanent insurance that doesn't expire. And depending on your situation, would determine what amount of insurance is adequate for you. But that's something that, you know, I have a conversation with the people that I work with to determine how much insurance, you know, you should have. Now, you also asked me about legacy, you know, planning, and I liken that to generational wealth. That's a concept that a lot of people, you know, have maybe heard of, or maybe they haven't heard of, and you're thinking generational wealth. You know, I see these companies, these families that have, you know, a lot of money, you know, it's been handed down over the years, but, you know, I personally don't have enough money to make sure that future generations are taken care of, but I would argue that by saying you actually do. Because life insurance is a way to pass on generational wealth. You know, even if you can't save up that money throughout your lifetime, when you pass away, that passes down to the next person in line, and you can set it up a certain way where they can take the money. They have to take the money in a certain manner. But the point is that you're able to, you know, to pass that legacy on through life insurance, or parents, you know, our parents are older than us, you know, and they're more than likely going to predecease us. And you can actually purchase insurance on your parents. And then that's a way to, you know, pass down that legacy. So there's, it's more than just, you know, one pronged approach when it comes to insurance, you know, of course, protecting your family and in the event something happens to you, but also creating that generational wealth that's going to, you know, benefit years to come.
Yeah. How important is a will in this process?
So a will is definitely very important. Wills, trust, you know, just basically your last, you know, testament of what you want to have happen. I think a lot of people don't think about a will, and maybe they have a will and they haven't updated it. Maybe their life has changed. And they need to make sure that that will is in line with, you know, their current stage of life. So I do think in conjunction to having, you know, insurance and having investments and things like that, you want to consult with somebody to help them or to help you set up a will to make sure that, you know, if when you do pass away, that your wishes are carried out in the manner that you desire.
Yeah, and if so, when somebody comes to see you, you can connect them with other professionals who can help them with some of these things they need.
Correct, correct, exactly, yeah. If you want to set up a will, I can connect you with a professional or a trust. I can connect you with a professional that I trust, I guess no pun intended, to help you get that set up.
Yeah. Towards the end of the book, one of your last concepts you introduced to us is guns and butter. Talk to us about guns and butter.
Yeah, so guns and butter, you know, it's actually an economic concept. Some people may have heard it before and maybe not heard, you know, where that derived from. So, you know, years ago, countries looked at what was important to spend their money on, guns, which was defense, you know, wartime. And then butter, which, you know, were the programs, the subsidies, you know, for people that needed them, the different programs. And I kind of put a spin on it and like in guns and butter to guns being, you know, what's important, right? You know, the things that appreciate with value, you know, your different assets, your stocks, your bonds, your retirement plans, your insurance. Items that you put money into that's going to earn a return and things that are going to benefit you in the future. And the butter, those are the things that really don't benefit you in the long run because like those pair of shoes that I talked about earlier, I couldn't sell them back for what I bought them for. And in excess, then that's not going to be healthy. So just like butter, it's not healthy in excess, right? So same thing when you're purchasing these items, you know, maybe like jewelry. Again, some cars could be used as an asset. Clothes, you had mentioned earlier, getting, you know, your nails done, things like that all the time. Those are things that, you know, or not telling you not to pleasure, you know, yourself and make sure that you take care of yourself and treat yourself. But you want to make sure that you take care of what's important and purchase those quote-unquote guns because those are the things that are going to benefit you more in the future versus the butter.
Yeah. Would you have cause to get involved with helping people develop a budget?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I do. So if somebody wants to start from, I guess I call it ground zero budgeting, I'm able to help them start, you know, with a viable budget. Of course, you know, budgeting takes discipline. At the end of the day, you're the one that has to carry that out, because even though I give you the plan to budget, you have to make sure that you're the one that's actually taking advantage of it, of the budgeting plan that we came up with for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's 72 pages in Thinking Your Way to Wealth, A Guide to Financial Independence, chock full of information, more than what we even talked about today. At the end of every chapter, we have summary points, and then questions to ponder or discuss, because people may want to sit at the dinner table and use those questions to educate and discuss with family their family strategies for financial decisions in the future and what have you. So, again, Thinking Your Way to Wealth, if you click on the link on the homepage for this show, the listing page, the scheduling page, that'll take you right to Amazon. Thinking Your www.thinkingyourwaytowealth.com, or getting in touch with Orlando, thinkingyourwaytowealth@gmail.com. What else? What didn't we cover? What else would you like to say to anybody listening, where your work or the book or financial planning or wealth or any of that is concerned?
Yeah, so first thing I'd just like to, I guess, end on is, you know, I look at Thinking Your Way to Wealth as a three-pronged approach. The first thing you have to do is prepare your mind. And when I say prepare your mind, just, you know, accept the fact that there's a problem that you have, you know, that you have financially, and that you want to work out of it. And you basically, you have to decide, like anything else, that you want to change, you know, whether, you know, you're trying to, you know, change your weight or change your certain habits or whatever it is, you have to prepare your mind first to make that change happen. And then the next part of that is to plan. You have to take a sufficient amount of time set aside to actually plan for your future and what you want to do. And that's obviously, you know, what I can help you with. And then thirdly, you have to execute. Right, you have to execute your plan, and you'll be rewarded. You know, may want to find an accountability person that's going to help you, you know, with an execution. So I would definitely want people to think about that, preparing your mind, planning, and executing. But in addition to that, I'm available for speaking engagements. You know, I've been asked from a lot of people to, you know, speak to different groups, you know, that they have, you know, on to talk about what we're talking about today, finances. I do have a podcast that I started, and, you know, I'm here. I'm definitely here to help, you know, use me as a resource that maybe you've been looking for, maybe you haven't been looking for, to figure out what course of action is best for you to get your finances in order.
Yeah, yeah, and it's somebody that I think you're living what you teach, and it's a fascinating story to see how your entree into this world and how consistent and faithful you've been in the world. How's the book doing after the first couple of weeks? Are you pleased?
Yes, yeah, I am surprisingly pleased. You know, I didn't, again, you know, when I was writing the book, you know, again, I was just thinking I need to get these thoughts down on the, you know, onto paper. And, you know, I didn't know, like, how well it would be received. I mean, because at the end of the day, there's a lot of financially related books out there. But I think because, one, people know, you know, who I am, and because it doesn't have jargon, I kind of take some of the, you know, demystification out of the whole process. People are gravitating towards it. So the book's doing really well. You know, I'm definitely pleased with it. And I, like I said, you know, from this book, I'm thinking like, hey, I should write another book. But, you know, I want to let this one digest first, right? But to answer your question, the book is doing very well.
Good, good. Well, there's the, you know, success is no accident, and it's well put together and well thought out. And again, there's integrity here. There's credibility here, because it's not just you espousing principles. It's you sharing what you've learned. And it's not just, you know, you went to a financial seminar, you've been living this all your life, and your desire is to share it with other people, and I think you've done a great job. So, Orlando, thank you and for your time, and keep us in mind for the next book. I'd love to, this was a pleasure to work with you on this one, but you produce something that's, I think, going to help a lot of people, and the good news is the best is yet to come. So keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on your show.
All righty. Take care. So long.
You too. Bye.
All right, Orlando Houston, Thinking Your Way to Wealth, A Guide to Financial Independence, available on Amazon.com or UrbanPress.us. I like this young man. Of course, I'm 70, so everybody's younger than I am. And now I look back, and I thank God for some of the financial decisions that we made, and I regret we didn't make some different ones. And so start as early as you can, but whenever you're going to start, get started. And as Orlando said, an accountability partner it can be very, very helpful. So anyway, this is John Stanko, your host for Wake Up to Purpose, signing off and encouraging you to follow through on what your thought is, whether it's to get the book or get in touch with Orlando or get in touch with somebody who can help you take some steps today to better prepare for your financial future. Until we're together again, so long for now.
Thanks again for listening to Wake Up to Purpose with John Stanko. To get in touch with John, you can go to www.purposequest.com or write him at johnstanko@gmail.com.